This episode is brought to you by Chiefs on Broadway. There's a different way to experience live music in Nashville. Eric Church's Chiefs on Broadway is home to the Neon Steeple, an intimate live music venue in the heart of downtown Nashville, where artists and songwriters take the stage for up-close, unforgettable shows. From stripped-down sets to surprise guests, no two nights are the same. Check out the Neon Steeple lineup and get your tickets now at chiefsonbroadway.com. It's June, and we believe there's no time quite like the summer to enjoy some country music. BGS is leaning into all things quality country with our sister site, Good Country. This month's edition of Good Country highlights Artist of the Month, Jody Messina, and we have sit-downs with Braxton Keith, the Broody Brothers, and Ashley McBride. Dive in at thebluegrasssituation.com/goodcountry. Hi, and welcome to Basic Folk, where we have honest conversations with folk musicians on the bluegrass situation. It's your host, Cindy Howes. Well, hi. Hi, thank you so much for checking out the show today. Very excited to have the Milk Carton Kids on, Kenneth Pattingale and Joey Ryan. Of course, they're always such great guests. They have a fantastic new album out, Lost Cause, Lover Fool. Before we get into that, let's talk about ways that you can connect with us here at Basic Folk. You can sign up for our monthly newsletter at the link in the show notes, or you can go to basicfolk.com. There is a sign up for the newsletter button there. You can also follow us on social media at Basic Folk Pod. We are also a listener-supported podcast, so if you'd like to throw us a couple bucks, you can do so at the link in the show notes or basicfolk.com/donate. You can also subscribe on your chosen platform, or you can tell a friend. I make a suggestion of who you can share this episode with all the way at the end of the podcast, so if you ever want to check that out, listen all the way to the end. Okay, Kenneth Pattingale and Joey Ryan, the Milk Carton Kids, are calling their latest album, Lost Cause, Lover Fool, The One. They have finally figured out how to feel and sound like themselves with a broader sonic palette. They attribute that to sharing one mic when they sing literally and sonically to each other. The songs on the album enlarge small feelings and moments and works to turn those into eternity. These are moments that usually pass too quickly to notice, and the guys have spent their careers making a case for staying small, staying present, and listening closely. We loved our conversation with Kenneth and Joey so much. In fact, immediately following the interview, Lizzie sent me a voice recording expressing just that.
I think that was like one of my favorite episodes we've ever done. It was so real and so cool, and what great guests and what great hosts. Love you, Cindy. You're the wind beneath my wings.
Awesome. That totally pumped me up. We learned that Joey is a Nepo folk baby, as his mother, Debbie, was in a folk duo in college. We dig into what death, as well as the banjo, are up to on their new album. We explore what it means to be labeled weenies versus gentle or the titans of yearning. We also hear from the guys about how they do not actually feel pressured to be funny. They just are. We'll take a listen to a song from the new album. Here is a clip of Blue Water, and then we'll get to our conversation with the Milk Carton Kids on Basic Folk.
Dreams of you all in my mind. Sunshine and the wind still high as I walk down the riverside. I used to hold you in my arms, sing you sleeping on my chest. Blue's the color of the sky. That's the time I love the best. Blue, blue water. dark on the morning light. Blue, blue water, smiling up at the sky. Blue, blue water, singing the river's high, drowning out the by and by.
Kenneth Pattingale, Joey Ryan, also known as Milk Carton Kids, welcome back to Basic Folk.
Well, thanks for having us.
Well, it's great to be back.
I am Lizzie Noh, here with my co-host and legal adult, Cindy House.
Hello. We are both having a week here, so we're so thrilled to be talking with you guys. Mm.
Well, so we're don't happy disappoint to be us. Here. What's happening? Of the quite a week?
Yeah, what do you mean by that, Cindy?
Oh, I don't know. Just like, house repairs and childcare.
Yes, one of these weeks.
Right, yes.
Big breakup.
It's like
we'll
a basic.
Talk about that offline.
A basic life week.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just got home from tour with the old 97s, and so... as a result, I'm experiencing that ego death.
Yeah.
Do you get sick when that happens?
Yeah, like my whole body hurts.
Yeah.
When you have ego death?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
We've talked about that on the pod. I think back in 2019.
We used to just call it post-tour depression,
but I think ego death is a better descriptor for what that feeling is like. Although I think if I were just off of tour with old 97s, I might feel a little sense of relief because I have hair jealousy with Rhett Miller.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm around him.
His hair, you have to actually respect and honor as a separate character in the band because otherwise, how could one guy be blessed with so much?
I know.
Okay, back to Basic Folk. Let's jump in. This is a question for both of you. Growing up, what did the term folk music mean to you? And how has that changed now that you have a whole catalog of your own music?
Well, my folk was like the PBS definition of folk music. Mm-hmm. You know that one?
Like public works folk.
Not even that academic and cool. Like, do you guys remember Blowin' in the Wind? Well, we have it packaged on a CD for you here in 45 different iterations. All your favorite versions of Blowin' in the Wind.
Folk music only existed in 45 disc box set form.
Yes.
But I think maybe the first time I remember that definition changing or expanding was... the great folk institution of Los Angeles that persists to this day, which is McCabe's Guitar Shop, where they've been holding concerts since probably the early 70s.
I love McCabe's.
All-time great venues. I went to see a Chris Smither concert there in 05. And that was the first time I think I saw the folkies up close. And by the way, I had seen... Bob Dylan at the Pantages in the 90s and other things, but none of that counted compared to the line of folkies outside McCabe's. So it was either that or maybe around the same era, internet radio served up a live version of John Prine Hello in there. And when I heard that broadcast... through an MP3 player from public radio in Michigan or something, that also kind of tilted the world's axis for me. And I think started maybe what I understand to be the definition of folk music now, or what it is for me and for us, because it's a evolving thing that is subject to participation at all times.
Joey, what's folk to you?
Joey doesn't know what folk... Also, by the way, I meant to clarify that he's my legal dependent. I know you recognize Cindy as a autonomous adult. This is my legal dependent, Joey Ryan.
Yeah. I never thought about folk music until we started playing it. it wasn't like a genre consideration, I suppose. Like, I think the bands, the CDs that got played the most in my house growing up were Bob Dylan, Blood on the Tracks, and a lot of Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. And so now I think of those as basically folk artists, but at the time I probably would have lumped them in with like classic rock. Mm-hmm. Like we had a classic rock or two radio station here in LA, and like that's what they would have played too. But my dad taught me to play House of the Rising Sun on the guitar, you know, as a vehicle for teaching me the guitar chords, mm-hmm. like the basic guitar chords. And like, I didn't know that was a folk song. And, you know, also like Scarborough Fair, which I didn't know was a folk song mm-hmm. until later.
Parsley Sage.
Yeah. Rosemary and also Thyme. So it's a kind of like one of the more culinary folk songs, if you think about it.
Yeah. Joey's also spent his entire career burying the lead, which like it took an embarrassing amount of years for me to learn this. And then somehow it never took hold. And I think it should be the thing we lead everything with. But
I know. But think about how long it took for me to realize that this was important.
Yeah, I still don't think it's gotten through to you. But Joey's beloved mother, Debbie Ryan, in her college years was in a folk duo. Like Joey is Nepo Baby folk duo.
Oh my God, I knew there was something about you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do give Nepo Baby, don't I? But it's like she was in a folk duo because she went to Berkeley in the 70s and literally every person picked up an acoustic guitar and sang harmony with their friends. So mm-hmm. I don't mean to downplay it because I think it is significant, but she will downplay it and be like, no, like me and my friend like played Peter, Paul and Mary covers at the coffee shop, like on Telegraph Avenue. Like they didn't have a name. They didn't have like a name for a folk duo. They weren't like, you know, that was just like their hobby. That was like, which I think might've been common, but no, it is true at like, you know, the guitar I learned on was my mother's guitar that she played mm-hmm. in coffee shops in Berkeley in the 70s, a little like a classical nylon string guitar that my dad taught me House of the Rising Sun on. So there, you know, they were basically hippies that became...
You're dyed in the wool.
I suppose. That's a good... Is that a folk song?
I'm always creating... Well, I have to say that's very powerful to hear because in my Bay Area college student folk duo, I was covering You All. And here we are today.
That's so cute.
We played I'll Be in New York on the harp. Yeah, it was so informative to me early on like what a, you know, folk duo could be like. So thank you very much.
Unbelievable. That really, that fucks me up when people say things like that.
Yeah, actually.
I saw you on my 24th birthday when you were on that co-headlining tour with Sarah Jarosz, and you did the whole set together, and I was like, oh, collaboration and harmony. Okay, here's how we get in.
That's amazing. Speaking of folk music, that's where, on that tour is where I learned to play the banjo because Sarah and Mark Richards taught me the banjo.
Wow, what a great person to teach you the banjo.
Incredible.
And that's when we really became a folk band.
Right. You bring in the banjo.
When Joey started telling that story, it was like 7 or 8 years ago, and he doesn't seem to update the number, so it's always 7 or 8, but
that's like
that
17.
Tour was so long ago now.
It was 12 years ago.
Time is hard.
Mm. We've all got one foot in the grave. Anyway, Cindy?
So you guys have the reputation of being like the funny folk duo. What has that been like? Like, what if you don't feel like being funny? Like, what is it like to have this expectation of comedy at all times? And do you ever feel like you're not heard or understood because you're just expected to be funny guys?
I've felt that constantly for 16 years. But also it has never been a burden because we don't know how to be purposefully funny. It was found out on accident to begin with and then as a part of sort of the energetic pattern. And if we ever try to engage in it actively, it falls flat. And so at some point I had to accept that not only did everybody think that we were hilarious, but that we don't have to do anything to do that. And in fact, if we think about it, it gets in the way and complicates things. And so it was really easy from the beginning for me to just leave it alone, accept the compliment, continue going on being who we are, which I didn't learn that lesson in music until much later, like until recently. And boy, it took a lot of pressure off and made the stage a much more enjoyable place, made writing a much more enjoyable place, being in a partnership be a much more enjoyable place, just accepting yourself for who you are and knowing that it meets the audience and their expectations, that they don't have any expectations. But it's kind of a weird gift, like you said, Cindy, that we were perceived as a very specific thing, like pretty early on, and we were happy for it. But like the years that we thought that we were like in control of that or manipulating that, complete disaster. So for me personally, I just sort of accept it for what it is. And, you know, like we do the hosting job at the Americana Awards constantly. And the first year we like hired a comedy writer to help prepare the stuff and whatever. And like, I think, well, Joey will have to tell you if it was good for his process. I think it served his process. For me, it was like doing a bunch of work that wasn't relevant before it happened, because it's not like our cute little one-liners were going to like, like make the show happen. To me, the show happens when you find the energetic fit with the audience, and there's no, there's nothing you can do to prepare for that. And so I've found like the more that you just sort of submit to the experience. Oh, but this was my point, is that everybody would say that, and then whether or not it would go good or bad, every time you meet somebody, they go, "Oh, you're so funny." And I'm like, I think it doesn't matter what we do at all. So I've just stopped caring.
Is that what it's like to be a man?
Good call. Yeah.
But Cindy, okay, wait, I think it's very relatable. Like if enough people tell you, "You look so cute," at a certain point, just say, "You know what? I'm cute. Nothing to earn it. Well, don't got to continue chasing it. Let's just like live in the abundance of that." Great.
The other way that I can, I relate completely to what you said, Kenneth, and the other way to think about it would be like, if people tell you like you have a good voice, like, or if you believe and know that you have a good voice, and that's one of the things that gives you the confidence to be a singer and do it as your career, like, you're not going to go up on stage every night and be like, "Oh shit, what if I have a bad voice?"
Yeah.
Like, you know, you can sing the notes, you know, I guess if you have laryngitis or something, you could, and you can sing, like, some nights your voice feels really good and you're like, "Yeah, I can do whatever I want with my voice tonight." And some nights it doesn't feel as good, but like, within range, you're still going to be able to put on a good show. It's a similar thing. And I will also say that I've always felt like with the comedy part of our show, it feels totally, it's very reassuring that to always have the ripcord there of like just playing a song. Like,
yeah, totally.
We don't, it's not, it's like actually promised. Yeah. Like we could go up and just do a show where we just play our songs. And it would be fine. And so, like Kenneth said, at some point during the process of being in front of an audience, we're going to find that energy and whatever that, you know, it's such a common experience. It's such a funny convention. There's so many funny conventions to putting on a concert that like everybody's experiencing in common. It's such an artificial human experience if you think about it, where everybody's sat down facing one direction and all the lights are off except the one that's on you, and they have to be quiet and you got a microphone, and it's like, it's actually very artificial. So just being in touch with that in the moment and subverting it, I think, a little bit as like a starting point for having a perspective on that show, I think is where we're coming from. And as long as we're in touch with that, we're going to be able to make everybody feel at ease, which I think is the source of the laughter.
That sounds like a very feminist relationship with your audience. I like to hear that.
Nice. But also sometimes we fucking bomb and it's not, it's gotten very rare, but it happened recently, like once on the last tour, and it's a bad feeling because, you know, at some point you are up there trying to be funny, and it's not like finishing a song where people feel they have to applaud. Like if you tell a joke that doesn't work, they just, nothing happens, and you're like, okay, I guess we'll do a song. And if it happens like four or five times in a row, you're like, all right, maybe tomorrow,
back to the drawing board.
Yeah.
That leads me to my next question, which is that the two of you are always chasing tension and never aiming for the resolution in your music. Maybe not never, but you find your way in winding ways. And this also happens to be part of your dynamic interpersonally. So when you find yourself disagreeing, how long do you linger? Do you guys have processes for working out tension, uncomfortable
years.
Moments? Like what do you learn in those tense moments?
Yeah. I think it has lingered for 15 years, 16 years. What is the count, Joey? I don't know. What is 15. What is time?
We met in 15. December. We met in December of 2009.
Oh.
And we played together as an unnamed duo for a year. And then in 2011, we put out our first album and announced our band name in the beginning of 2011. So 15
prologue.
Years, 16 and 15. Yeah.
This would be your 17th year of friendship coming this December.
That's amazing. True. If we had been friends that entire time, this would be our 17th
right.
year of friendship.
Right. T! Look at this tension.
Well, that was actually going to be to the point of my answer. I would think that among the most important things I've learned in my marriage is...
Which one?
My full-time marriage.
Your legal marriage?
My at-home marriage. My marriage in the eyes of...
Your government marriage?
Government and God.
Tension!
I would think that the most important thing that I've learned or clocked in that marriage is to always strive for good vibes, but never take anything for granted. Because both people are constantly changing and the world is such a crazy and heavy place. And even though you're in lockstep, the thing that's happening inside and outside a person, like sometimes you just don't have access to it. And so constantly you're going to look to your side, and there will be a whole ass new person there that really resembles the one you've spent so much time with, but there's like a new thing to contend with, and sometimes you're that change. And I think that Joey and I, so then in my band, there's periods where there's a lot more away time, and it wasn't quite like that at the beginning, but there's a lot more away time. And I think there's something, and Cindy, this might also be very colored by being boys or being young or something, but that a lot of that time, I think that Joey and I wouldn't not take for granted, but it would sort of be assumed that when we got back together to do our thing, that we were dependable on the same for the same stuff. And I think that, like, it never was hit over my head quite the way it is at home, that Joey's constantly changing and I'm constantly changing. And there's like, it is important that there are, that the like update software updates be installed or else, you know, like, or else it's really going to bite you. And I think that, like, the razor's edge hair of tension, I think, is where Joey and I trade information. And that's, I think, how we learn each other and how we perform together and how that, like, in some ways, that's a lot of the energy source, maybe.
So that's, like, tension as curiosity? Hmm.
Yeah.
Are you guys' heads constantly filled with like quotes and you can't remember where they came from and you feel dumb for not being able to attribute properly the like plagiarized information that you built your identity around?
I accidentally write a Jewel song every few years.
Well, like, who, I don't know who it was who said that, like, you know, to the extent that life is like you know, like jazz, it's like how you run the changes.
Mm-hmm. Who said that?
I don't know. I bet it's in my head. You know,
was it a jazz guy?
That sounds right.
It's your, you know, it's if you're going to be in a relationship for 15 years or 20, as my government marriage has approached now. Yeah, everything's going to change all the time. And so it's about how you run the changes. You're like soloing over the changes of your marriage.
I hope you're giving her solos.
Yeah.
That part.
I mean, you both.
Let's go to the rhythm section, Joey Ryan.
Joey's just got a piano player at home holding down the chords.
Well, that's in that marriage. My other marriage is to someone who hasn't stopped soloing since day one.
Got him.
In preparation for this interview, I listened to a handful of other like podcast interviews, and the best one was you talking with Ann Powers at Folk Alliance this year, which is on YouTube. If anyone missed it, it's like definitely worth watching. Okay, so I want to talk about your first radio promo campaign and what KEXP wrote about you.
They are weenies?
They are weenies, which I want to know who wrote that note, because that feedback, I feel like, so that must have been like 2011, 2012, like the 2010s were like such a time. But like these days, KEXP's whole thing is like, you are not alone. And they have like special days of programming for like cancer survivors and like people struggling with grief. So
they have a weenie day.
They don't have a weenie day. I used to work at WYP in Pittsburgh, and I really wanted to do a day of programming called Sad Bastards. The program director, he was like, okay, let's do it, but we have to call it Sad Sacks. I was like, damn, that
See,
is
everybody got
pop.
Sad.
It's not as good.
We were just a little ahead of the curve on the sad boy thing, I think. And like,
oh, Joey's missing the point that Bastards was censored.
Yeah.
And just blow into the sad part.
Yeah, I feel like it would have, you know, it would have been a hit, but I digress. Yeah. So the point of this whole bringing this thing up is that you are gentle guys. You are
gentlemen.
Weenies. How have each of you experienced gentleness, and how has that changed your relationship to masculinity?
God, you flipped that.
I feel like I'm hogging the answers, so I'd want to let Joey go first.
Well, I just want to clarify, because it makes it even worse, that comment from KEXP that just said they are weenies was not even like a public review. That was like in the private notes, like
in the little spreadsheet you get,
just to us directly. Like, it wasn't for them to be a tastemaker.
It was to your like, radio promoter.
Yeah, that wasn't like their own like edgy branding. That was just like personal feedback from a person we did not know personally.
whose approval we were seeking.
Yeah.
Whose community approval.
Yeah. We were like, hey, can you help us out? We're a new band. Like, can you play our song? And he was like, no, and here's the reason.
Yeah.
That's what it's like early on, honestly. People will just tell you, have you tried working on your songwriting? Are you looking into vocal technique?
We do get a lot of notes on Instagram now from audio engineers who think that they could really help us take our sound to the next level.
Oh, man.
Oh, hell yeah.
I get a lot of emails about how I could take my podcast to the next level and what am I even doing on YouTube?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Wait, but also, so, guys, what are we thinking? Why are we not taking them up on their generous offers?
Like, literally. Yeah. These people just want to help.
Well, one thing is, I want to talk about the gentleness because I love that question. But and I know this was a big joke, but like truly, I don't want to go to the next level, whatever that means.
Yes, contentment.
And I definitely don't want to go to whatever the next level is, as defined by whatever that person's whatever they think the next level is. I definitely don't want to go there.
Yeah.
It didn't feel good to be told that we were weenies. It felt better to hear like what Ann Powers said which I don't think I had ever read the thing that she brought to light in that interview, which is that someone else around that time had called us titans of yearning. Which that feels a little better. So I think, like, if I'm, you know, real time self-reflecting, like, it feels like there's a strength inherent in gentleness, which is dismissed by the comment of calling somebody weenies and more acknowledged by the expression titans of yearning, because yearning, you know, yearning expresses like includes all the vulnerability and kind of I don't want to say weakness because it isn't weakness, but that like something lacking or nostalgic or I don't know, yearning. There's not a better word for yearning than yearning. But when he put titans in front of it, like that makes it feel strong and respected, like the like there's respect to the, you know, mm-hmm. for the yearning. And so, yeah, I feel like the type of music that we all reference here, like in earlier in this conversation, that we grew up with and thought of as folk music, it's very vulnerable, it's very personal, it's very exposed. And God, I mean, what takes more strength than to like stand in public in judgment of your peers and community and put yourself forward like that? What takes more strength than that, you know? Whatever is perceived as gentleness has never exactly felt that way to me. Mm-hmm. It always feels like the music that I'm seeing and from our community and that we're trying to do is actually super strong and like convicted and self-assured. Even if the art is coming, it is about or coming from a place or coming out of experiences where you don't feel that way. I think the mm-hmm. idea of taking those feelings, turning them into art, putting them into the world publicly and sharing them is a way of reclaiming the sort of, shattering whatever weakness there is, or taking whatever that weakness is and forging it into something kind of strong. So I don't know. I did not identify with that feedback. I didn't find it helpful because I felt it missed the mark. I guess another way of saying it is like we make a big deal for ourselves, and also just like it's almost part of our brand at this point of talking about like sad songs. Like our camp is called Sad Songs Summer Camp, and like the COVID thing that we did was called Sad Songs Comedy Hour. And it's a little bit ironic because I actually in my heart and soul believe that like really there is no such thing as a sad song, because the act, you know, we write about sad things and the content and the themes can be sad, but the act of taking that something sad and turning it into art is the most inherently hopeful thing that a person can do. So the song
and
itself,
to assert oneself as the speaker and the singer claims a personhood that a lot of us struggle to access in other contexts, I think.
Yeah, imagine. Sorry, go on. Imagine somebody made a song, recorded it, burned it onto a CD, and sent it to you, and your reaction was that they're somehow weak.
No, I heard Ain't Too Proud to Beg at an impressionable age, and I don't think there's anything cooler than that. Let's talk about summer
the song,
camp.
The song or like ask or
oh,
asking
the song.
Oh, okay.
And just the yearning of like every great R&B song is like a type of masculinity that is feels green flag to me. And that's sort of what we're talking about.
Lizzie, what is green flag?
Green flag is like, I guess
this could be
like
trouble,
non-threatening,
but it's got the
stamp
of approval.
Like, yeah.
Oh, green
like
flag.
Basic like, folk approved man.
Okay, great.
Oh, I'm sorry that I'm exposing our internal code, Cindy, but there are just a few basic folk approved men. And
like
that circle is expanding, but it's strict.
And we're on the podcast, so does that mean that means we're in?
No, not necessarily.
Oh, it's like an audition?
Depends on what you say, brother.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's going pretty good so far.
Is it the opposite of red?
Recently been designated a basic folk approved man in all the masculine that I embody. But I've been a host on the show for 5 years, so.
You've been a host for, 5 years.
Oh, they do math like us.
Yeah.
Podcast hosts, okay. They're just like us.
Oh. You have a summer tradition of putting on your camp counselor hats at the Sad Songs summer camp. And in a way, it's a changing of your relationship with your audience because it's more like teacher-student collaborator vibes with the folks that come. So can you first talk about the geographic setting that the camp takes place in and then like what you learn from that type of collaboration and interaction with your friends and fans?
Well, it's in the Catskills. So geographically, it's a known quantity. Farmland out upstate New York. Beautiful, pastoral.
But
yeah,
it's
not
always,
a pasture.
It kind of is pastoral also. There's like pastures.
Joe, yeah. You're walking the thin line here.
Yeah.
I'm going to remove you from the Zoom.
Yeah. So. And it's sort of everything. I think I have a cute way to address a few of the themes that have come up, which for me the answer to the gentleness thing is that I wasn't very gentle until about 8 years ago, I don't think. And my life changed pretty drastically 8 years ago, and it's made me a very gentle person. And life is really comfortable, has always been really comfortable, and the parallels are kind of weird, like the way the milk carton kids has served my life, like is very sort of male troped, Cindy. It's like instantly accepted. It's comfortable to be there. It's not like they are weenies aside. We were sort of given every pass at every turn. And like I said, a lot of my not gentleness accompanied the beginning of our career, where I spent every night on stage, like, trying to accomplish something. There was something I was trying to do, and I, in hindsight, I realized I was miserable doing it because it was something that wasn't attainable. But I think it was sort of this goal set forth from the starting point of, like, a lot of privilege, and the way that I was leveled in life 8 years ago that has made me gentle is a direct reflection of me, for the first time ever, being interested in other people and being interested in what, how I'm defined as it is just related to the people around me and the surroundings around me. Because up until then, I thought that, I mean, not literally that I was the center of the universe, but that's what I was interested in. I was interested in my accomplishments. I was interested in my ideas being heard, in me, like, proving my idea of myself. And the last 8 years of my life have been defined by, like, it was just told to me by my body and by the universe that, like, that's not only not important, but it doesn't serve you. And so a lot of my gentleness has been accompanied by the hard growing pains of me trying to listen to the world and be enriched by it and be filled up by it, rather than me trying to be the source of that. And that's exactly what our camp is. The best part of it is that, like, this sounds like a cliche, but we learn more from everybody that attends it than they learn from us. And it's sort of a perfect little microcosm, maybe, for that same privileged space, which is that we get to sit up in the tall chairs pretending like we have some kind of knowledge or authority or some interest, and, like, we're both comfortable there because we've been given sort of a life of that seat, and it would feel weird to not have it. But no joke, like, we feel like everybody else when we're sitting there listening to somebody who just wrote their first song, singing in front of an audience, doing the magical thing. We're, like, right there in the audience being filled up the way that I think people that come to our shows are, people that listen to our records. It was a really, like, life-shattering, leveling thing to go participate in that camp and understand that we had that there was more than one role to it. And it very much mirrors sort of, I think, what I just described about my own personal experience just in our band and in my body and all of that.
Wow. Right on. Okay, should we wrap this up now? Just kidding.
I want to talk about the new album.
That was cool. Great. I just learned so much about Kenneth, and that was really beautiful.
Oh, are you taking the piss?
No.
Oh.
I'm so grateful to be here in this moment of y'all's friendship and journey as a band. And also, it was such a treat to get to go to Sad Song Summer Camp and just experience the, like, Secret Garden vibe. Hmm. It's a great experience.
Yeah. The most fulfilling week of the year for us, for sure. And I think we've been looking for other ways to interact with this community that we are a part of, all of us, all four of us are a part of. And I think it kind of, like, that it's been a really reinvigorating way to look at, you know, what this little career we've made has afforded us and allowed us to be and that the main thing that it's afforded us is kind of, we feel like we've found our people. And so looking, and they're all over the world, you know, and they're musicians and they're fans and they're writers and they're podcasters and, you know, radio hosts and stuff. And, like, we can go all over the world and just have kind of, like, fast friends with a lot of different people over this kind of common interest in folk music. And so finding different ways of relating to that community has been super rewarding, and the camp is, like, the main thing that we've found that has stuck. And, you know, our efforts to like start a folk festival in LA is comes from a similar impulse. And we've always, like, going back to the Sarah Giroux tour, our impulse to always be in collaboration is like a, you know, that was maybe our first impulse, was like, oh, we're a part of a community of musicians. We should collaborate with them all the time, which is true and which we love. But I think as that has, that idea has matured, it's like, it's not just the other touring musicians, for example, who are like on the bill at the same festivals. Like, that is a part of the community, but it's way bigger than that, actually.
Mm-hmm. Should we all do a cruise together?
Yeah. We just got off the boat. We're going to need another 10 years before we get back on, I think.
Only 10 years.
If we could do it on land, I'll be there.
So the
new
album, Lost Cause Lover Fool, you guys have said that space is the band's secret weapon. Mm-hmm. How did you learn that space can be so powerful? And when did you first experience the power of sparsely arranged music to turn down the world's chaos?
Probably from Gillian Welch and Dave Rawlings, mm-hmm. I think is the simple answer. Joey and I were both big and separate devotees of their music and their recordings, and especially in the years right before we collaborated, that was, you know, I don't think that we would exist without them, never mind their influence, but also just the time that they existed in and when it touched us and when it taught us what can happen on that front.
Yeah, the idea that it's, you're allowed to do that, like you can do something complete with two guitars and two voices. Mm-hmm.
The funny thing is, for me, in that paradigm, like, well, this even happened last night. I sat in with some friends at a show in LA and was again just sort of turned upside down about when you get on stage and you're there with a few people, the inertia that happens is always really unsettling to me, and I never am comfortable in it. And, you know, there's a part of all of the great music in history is about people finding the pocket with each other and people finding that kind of like rhythmic resonance. And I've found that every time I've ever been on stage, there's something about it that feels like a runaway freight train that I'm chasing after and I am not in control of. And our entire band has been, I think, me and Joey's effort to be like co-conductors of that. Every time we've added a third person, all of a sudden it's like the game of tug of war gets infinitely more complex, and you can't quite lock in the same way. And so in many ways, like, Joey and I have spent a career like learning what that is for each other and giving it to each other. And like, we fail half of the time. Literally half the time we come off stage and one of us looks at the other and says like, what the fuck, man? Like, why did you speed through that entire set? And then the other one goes, no, you were like pushing the front of the beat. And then I'm like, no, I'm holding back. Like, why aren't you following me? And I think a big part of our ability to even figure out what that is the space that's in our music. It might just be the way that I'm designed. When there's more people, like without that space, there's just a program that you have to get mm-hmm. with. And it's not like, you're not a part of being the like time setter. It's not your pulse. It's not mm-hmm. your essence that's like the main thing. And for me and Joey, that's like an actual compromise of just two things. And I think in a lot of ways, we need that space to be able to figure out what that is for ourselves.
Whoa. So the Milk Carton Kids time signature only has room enough for two cowboys. No, that's a really interesting way to look at it. It sort of sounds like you mathematically have more freedom to improvise and kind of push and pull rhythmically with as a duo. And that's like a trapeze-like function that keeps it really on the tracks.
Yeah, and it's also...
How many more metaphors can we add?
That was super well said, Lizzie. That's exactly how it feels. And I'm jealous of the idea that I think there are people that do that and feel that in trio or quartet or quintet or even in orchestra level, like sized ensembles. I think that's probably always the goal. But yeah, for us, that's what the duo is.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk about what the banjo is doing on Lost Cause Lover Fool. I feel like she kind of speaks up right away and calls our attention. And I want to know what that character is for y'all. And yeah, what your journey's been like with the banjo.
Well, first of all, that just really, I'm floored by the question. And it's going to change my entire perspective on the banjo. I don't know if you meant to do it, but... I will now forever think of the banjo as a character.
Oh, yeah.
And she is a female character. Mm-hmm. I didn't think of the banjo as gendered or even anthropomorphized in any way. Mm. But for our next record and for all future performances, I shall think of her as a woman.
I love it.
You've thawed the iceberg. Joey's finally in touch with his feminine side. We've been trying for 15 years.
It's not even
Welcome
feminine
to Basic
side.
Folk.
It's just my human side. I don't even think of it as a person. Banjo has now achieved personhood.
All right, baby steps, baby steps.
I'm too busy like having my entire paradigm shifted.
You know, Joey started playing the banjo in this band and
seven or eight years ago now, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And
what I find it to be, Joey is quite literally with the acoustic guitar, like the bedrock of an entire body of work that we've made together,
mm-hmm.
like the actual concrete in the ground upon which like nothing would exist were it not there. And in many ways, that's a very tight cage to be in. And I know that, not that he's happy to do it, but it serves an important enough function for the other three of us to do what we do in our band, that has to be maintained. Mm-hmm. And to me, the banjo has always represented his ability to seek something else with his hands in our band, and it's always been that. That's the gravity that really only ever pulls me away from what I've always taken to be my role in the band. And so it wasn't until Joey started writing songs on the banjo did I ever like play rhythm guitar in our band, because it made sense that like in order for what he was expressing to be held the right way, it wouldn't be appropriate for me to buzz around like a little fly. Like need to lock in and do the thing. And that's
you're like the designated driver in the band.
Totally. And that's taken on like very different forms as he evolves as a banjo player, as he tries to say different things with those songs that he's written. The funny thing is that her speaking up immediately on the album is actually me playing the banjo.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't have done it if it wasn't Joey's banjo and it wasn't like a thing that he brought to the table and a voice that we feel comfortable with and we feel like represents us. But so to me, that voice really represents like one of Joey's main contributions to our band, and one of the places that holds the most capacity for evolution and growth, and for, you know, leading us towards somewhere that we didn't know was a place we were going, and we'll figure out if it's where we want to be or not.
You know what I like about cool the as banjo hell. As a character is as gently as you can ever play it. The banjo is a strong woman, and nobody would ever call the banjo a weenie.
So true. The banjo has aura.
For sure.
You all have mentioned that this album was the one where you finally figured out how to feel and sound like yourselves while also still having a broad sonic palette in the recordings. You have attributed that to sharing one mic when you can do that and singing literally and sonically to each other. Can you describe what happens when you sing to each other on one mic? And how do you know when you're sounding like yourself?
The thing of how, for me, like what it sounds like when we're sounding like ourselves vocally, sonically, is when like it does, like when it can, when we can lose track ourselves of who's singing what, and that level of disappearing individually into whatever our collective whole is like kind of like a high that I'm always chasing in the moment, and I suspect is something of the appeal of whatever the magic trick is that we feel like we're doing for, or like a spell that we're trying to cast on the listener, is like a little bit of the confusion, or Joe Henry calls it a seduction. Not about us, but in general, like, you know, the bit of mystery that music can create, it feels like a seduction, which is kind of the feeling that he's always after. And so, to me, there's a particular resonance that happens with our voices sometimes if we're doing it the way we mean to do it that is totally mysterious. And I find that I can sometimes even forget what I'm singing, like in real, like in the moment, in real time. Yeah. You know, I would have to like go in the other room separately and be like, what is my part there? What am I actually doing?
Is that what they call frisson?
Is that a lettuce?
I heard someone describe it as when, like, when you can just feel like something's really, really in tune and vibrating exactly right.
Frisson?
Yeah.
Cool.
But then again, what do I know? I'm not going to Google.
I don't Google.
I am.
Why would I, as a woman, access Google?
Are you allowed? Do they allow women to Google?
Not in Tennessee, baby.
Ah, yeah, right.
Wow. Sorry, that was very profound.
This seems like a good time to talk about death.
Oh.
It's always hey, that's a good our time joke. To talk about death. Aren't
which
we
is
always
the song?
Talking
oh,
about death?
Okay. A little bit. There, death is another character I wanted to ask about in your catalog, because they pop up, and I think especially
ooh,
in the song Blinded and Smiling.
Binary. Oh, this is fantastic.
Don't you think?
Banjo's a she, death is they.
All puppies
it.
Are she.
I love
who knows? But
I'm pretty sure death is a woman, and I don't mean that pejoratively. Well,
No. I mean, nothing's more powerful.
Totally. And hot take, like, despite the despite our anatomical handicap, isn't it time to just accept that like everything's a woman?
Thank you.
Aren't we there yet?
Thank you.
Yeah. Like,
finally,
I'm happy to make sure.
And that's how you get on the list of basic folk approved men.
I'm happy that anybody deserves the respect to be called whatever they need to be mm-hmm. called, like, all good. But the complexity and all encompassing nature of the feminine energy, like, includes in it and devours in it everything that the male encompasses and everything else. Like, you know, that's the big
one. I think science bears that out.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Well, we were going to ask how you all are relating to the inevitability of death, and is that something that was present for you in this album about appreciating small, fleeting moments?
Mm. I would say that you nailed it exactly on the head. That is the causation of it, in fact. For me, anyway. I think Joey would probably resonate with that as well. But yeah, that's exactly... Like, if our album was an escape room, you just solved it.
Wow. What did I win?
You just get let out of our capture.
Hell yeah. You get loud enough. And you get let out of the escape room, and now you're in the parking lot of the strip mall.
That is... If we figure out anything here, escape rooms need better prizes. That's all I'm saying.
I've never been to one.
Oh, there's so much fun. I just went for my birthday.
You're an Aries.
Yeah.
Guys, my
role... We don't have time to get into that.
My role in the escape room is relaxer.
Oh.
I relax.
We need that. We need that energy in order to escape. I think death, it for me, is a... Like... It's a little bit abstract, and I think there's a lot of ways to die, like mm-hmm. besides our physical death. I think a lot of, you know, we talk about the end of the world a lot, and you know, there's a lot of ways that the world can end. And I think I like to think about, the fact that, like, the world as we know it ends a lot. It does end. Like, when we talk about the apocalypse, we don't mean, like, human extinction. Sometimes we do, but, like, mm-hmm. the world can end long before that. And you can die in a meaningful sense many times in a life. You know, we become different people, and who we were before in a real sense is, you know, is a memory, which is a big, which is, I think, what we are when we die. And so death, I think, a lot of times for me as a songwriter, death is like metaphorical. I'm trying to, you know, avoid my fear of death by achieving some kind of acceptance of the fact that it's, you know, that it's actually happening all the time. I'm not making a lot of sense, but
You're making a lot of sense.
No, that was heavy. Yeah. I'm picking up what you're laying down.
We talked about it, Kenneth and I talked about it a lot, and one kind of interesting, I think, and gratifying thing to me about this album was when we did the dreaded exercise after the album was done of talking to each other about what we thought the album was about, because we knew we were going to have to give interviews and write a bio and do this part of the campaign. We actually totally were on the same page about what we thought the songs were about and the album was about and everything. And one of the main ideas was that, like, were the like you said, these, like, taking these small moments and expanding them and trying to find some eternity within by being in the moment, I guess is a trite way of saying it, but, like, you know, which is a way of escaping death. I think we're looking to transcend our time-bound existences constantly, and we think we're going to do it in all kinds of misguided and often destructive ways. But the only way we actually get any sense of the eternal.
Agree completely with one edit, which is that I think that's the way of achieving death, not escaping it. And I think that'll become an important clarification for everyone.
Sure.
If it hasn't already.
Well, death is a cruel mistress.
This is really one of our big episodes, I've decided. We really went there.
We did.
And so let's go beyond.
By the way, Kenneth's wife has written a new song, which is one of our favorite songs, which nobody's ever heard before. But
oh yeah, unbelievable.
It's called Death is a Woman.
And also, let me say, just out of politeness,
I am a big fan of Varasola.
Oh yeah. Out of politeness, we are, I think, 15 minutes late to our next thing, so
no, maybe it's only supposed to start now.
Oh, then we're five minutes.
It's Craig Havighurst. He'll understand.
Okay, can I ask you two lightning round questions and then let you go?
No, perfect. Ask them all. They're so good.
Okay, we're going to play
the game.
Which one? Okay, let me explain the game.
Okay.
It's called Which One? I'm going to ask a question, and on three, you guys are going to say the name of the person who answers the question. Here's an example. Whose last name is Ryan? One, two, three.
Joey.
So you can say your own name or the other person's name.
Are they all
going to
be that easy?
You could also say both.
Both or neither.
Yeah,
that's true.
Joey, did you answer on three, or were you late?
No,
like we went one, two, three, answer.
Roll the tape, yeah.
Okay.
One, two, three, answer. Kind of like our clap at the very beginning of this call.
Okay.
Hurry up, Craig's waiting.
Which one drinks more milk? One, two, three.
Joey.
Is it whole milk or is it low fat?
Whole.
Whole.
Lactose free.
Which one has a better handshake? One, two, three.
Kenneth.
Same.
Which one gives better advice? One, two, three.
Kenneth.
Really?
Wow.
Joey is declining to answer on a couple
so
of these.
That's so rude. Because he knows I'm right. He just couldn't give me the satisfaction.
Well, I know this is basically a personality assay. And I think you're getting all you need to know by my non-answer.
Great.
I took my answer into very serious consideration. I would have not said it if it weren't true.
So did I.
And I love that about both of you.
That wasn't meant to be snarky, by the way. What I mean by that is that's such a complicated question. It depends. I should have just said depends.
Well, there's no time like the present. Which one is more whimsical? One, two, three.
Kenneth.
Cute. Which one is more existential? One, two, three.
Depends.
Kenneth.
Whoa. Depends. And finally, which one always smells the best? Oh. One, two, three.
Joey.
Neither?
Neither.
Oh. Almost got it.
Guys,
I
would just say that lightning round was mediocre.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being on the podcast again. I think we all have a lot to think about.
Yes. Thanks, guys. Appreciate
Definitely.
It.
Definitely. Thanks,
you.
Y'all. This was very, very fun.
This episode of Basic Folk was produced by CJ Nungesser. Our music composed by Dietrich Strauss. Basic Folk is a production of The Bluegrass Situation. You can find all of our episodes there. You can search for Basic Folk on the SiriusXM app. You can find us on FolkAlley.com or Folk Alley's mobile app. You can go to BasicFolk.com or you can listen wherever you find your shows. If you enjoyed this episode, we think you should share it with a friend, maybe two friends that are a little bit too codependent and a little bit too funny for their own good. I think those two guys or gals or people would enjoy this episode. Thanks for listening all the way to the end. We love you so much. Okay, bye.